I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
Well, fans can be the harshest critics, you know.
And they often are.
A wife is often the harshest critic of her husband.
I thought I was invincible. That's what you're trained to believe as a sports person.
There was 4 million people in Ireland who knew much more about managing football teams than I did. When it comes to music, I can spoof at the best.
Your sporting career is the best time you'll have, and you know you have to hang on to it for as long as your life, because everything else is pretty crappy.
And this is not lies. Stephen Rothschild has never spoken to Jimmy McGuinness in his life.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to a special Saturday panel. We're partnering with Energia for their first ever Positive Energy Tag Tournament right here at Energia Park. Join us on air and on our social channels to watch the final of the tournament at 5 p.m. and see who takes home the grand prize of tickets to all of Ireland's Six Nations games next year. It's a pretty good prize. And joining us on our Saturday panel this afternoon, we've got Fergus McFadden, Sophie Spence and Johnny Murphy. You're very welcome, folks.
Cheers for having us. Yeah.
You've just been watching a bit of the tag rugby outside. They're taking it pretty seriously, which is unsurprising given the prize. But with your coaching hat on, Johnny, what have you thought of the standard?
Yeah, it's been very good. I think there's a few tag internationals out there. So, yeah, it looks good. And always a good social event, tag. So they seem to be enjoying themselves too.
You play a bit of tag?
Yeah, kind of more socially stuff. We played up in Newbridge Rugby Club this year. So just kind of a social event on Thursday night. So gets you out of the... It gets out of the house and yeah, it's always enjoyable. A few beers after as well, so the mixed stuff is really good fun.
And you'll be able to catch the final of that on our social channels at 5 o'clock this evening. It is, I think, a pretty big day when it comes to World Cup warm-ups. I can't remember our World Cup warm-up 4 years ago that had the sort of mood music around this. Fergus, like, it seems that this matters a little bit more than just a pre-season game.
Oh, 100%. There's so much at stake for so many players playing in both sides. You know, both coaches have gone pretty much as strong as they could go. I think, you know, the likes of Johnny Sexton, James Ryan, Robbie Henshaw carrying Knox. Otherwise, it's pretty much full strength, and the English are the same. So, you know, there's a couple of guys there getting opportunities that, you know, if they take them, they could, you know, secure their spot on their flight to Japan. So, please God, a few of those guys grasp the opportunities that they get.
What is the week in the run-up to a game like this like? Because you obviously have people who are sitting beside a fella in the dressing room knowing full well that they're going for a place on the seat in that plane to Japan, competing against somebody sitting beside them.
Mm. Yeah, it's difficult. It's a little bit hard to separate the selfish side to what's going on right now, because, one, they're not playing for, you know, the World Cup hasn't started, so they're playing for spots on the flight to Japan. And that's tough, but at the same time, if they don't play well as a team, they're not going to come across well as individuals. So, you know, for the likes of Ross Byrne today, I think it's such a great opportunity for him. I think he stood up last year in so many big games for Leinster. I mean, I just remember that Toulouse home game after them beating us over there. He controlled that game so well. The semi-final against Munster in the Pro 14, he was outstanding. So, in a hostile environment like Twickenham, please God, he can stand up and do it again today.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week in terms of what's been written about Ireland. I think Gordon Darcy's column is probably the most widely spread one this week. He said he's worried. Sophie, are you worried for Ireland?
I think it's a huge game. Do you know, Ireland-England game at any point is a big one. But I think you've got to look at it that the fact of the last game against Italy, it was the first, it was the opener, and it was a mixed team. You've got to try things tactically to see Joe's not going to show all of these cards going into these warm-up games leading into the World Cup. But I think now two strong teams facing each other in a big stadium, I think it gets the lads a chance to actually come together, control things, gain a bit more confidence, run through a few plays and really stand up and put their hand up as well, just like what Fergus said. And I think it all comes down to the physicality, but the mentality as well that they have, because I suppose this is kind of a worrying point for a player where you kind of think, oh God, I don't want to get injured, I want to be on the plane. So it's not shying away from anything that they're doing, go full pelt and put everything into this.
What do you think has happened to Ireland since last November? Sophie?
I think that Six Nations, I think from talks with the girls, we kind of thought, was it a happy camp? Do you know, was there a bit of upset there? I think sometimes when success isn't there, you know, you get shaken a little bit. And I think it's about finding yourself some resetting. So whatever was missing, it's about searching for something. Maybe it's not going backwards and putting that same thing in place. Maybe it's about finding new strategies or something that needs to be added to the culture. Maybe that's missing. In order to prepare best, you've got new players coming in and putting their hands up, and sometimes that can shake things up as well. But I think you've got to think of, you've got, like, so Rory, this is going to be his last tournament as well, and how are people actually feeling, what's people's mindset like, and I think all of those factors can play a part, do you know? It's going to be Schmidt's last tournament, and I think we've got to think about what are Ireland, they've gone through months now and weeks of preparation, they've got a plan, they're going to put something into place, and I think come the 22nd of September, they'll kick off right.
Johnny, do you think Joe's been holding something back perhaps during 2019 and that we're going to see it fully fledged at some point over these next few weeks?
I don't think he's been holding anything back. I think people are probably underestimating the confidence hit that the first game the Six Nations would have done in Dublin. And I think that kind of happened by chance, in the sense that, you know, Eddie probably ended up on his team, picking the best England team purely by accident based on injuries and who was available. And they put in an incredible performance. And that confidence hit is going to knock a team back that were kind of all conquering in 2018. It was, you know, it was unexpected, and I think I think that's just really knocked them back. And since then, they've been struggling to kind of put in a performance, regardless of results. I think their performance has just lacked, and I think a lot of that is probably down to confidence and a lot of, you know, it was a loss that Ireland weren't used to it all. And I think now, you know, the Italy game, a lot has been made about the performance, but that was genuinely their first pre-season game. That's what it was. And, you know, if you went to the Leinster game, you know, Coventry, Munster's game last weekend, Ulster, like, they're going to be, those pre-season games are generally littered with mistakes because you're just not right. I think probably the intensity in training has probably stepped up massively over the last 2 weeks since that, and they've been in Portugal and training in warm weather conditions. So, you know, today is about performance, not necessarily results. And someone like Ross Byrne, for me, is in the luxury of a position where he's like, okay, well, it's probably 50-50 whether I go or not. So he doesn't have to worry about minding himself. He can just go out and go, right, I'm going to give this the best shot I have because I've got nothing to lose. If he gets injured, he can kind of, you know, in himself, he can kind of be, well, it was 50-50 anyway.
Sure.
So, you know, and it's very important for him that he puts that performance and his best foot forward, and he's going to be the talisman today. Like, he's in control of how we play and where we go and what areas we play in. So it's a massive opportunity for him. But I think I'd be along Fergus's lines. I'd back him to do that because he's done it before, you know, in games for Leinster, and, you know, he's improved immeasurably over the last kind of 18 months over that.
Do you think it actually is 50-50 at this moment, or does the idea of him actually starting today, Johnny, actually mean that he is perhaps a 60-40 option at this point?
Well, I think it's probably 50-50, right. And I'd say, you know, chatting to Fergus beforehand, you know, Fergus saying that it probably is. Joe is going to make sure that if it's a 60-40, he's going to make sure that someone believes it's a 50-50, so they have to play. And, you know, I find that really interesting. I've only spent 3 or 4 days in an environment with Joe, so I don't really, but where Fergus would know a lot more. So I find that really, really interesting, that, you know, to have, try and keep everyone on their toes is a massive part of the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, what is your sense of that then, Fergus? Where is Joe at in terms of his thinking on the Carty versus Byrne situation?
I have to watch what I say now, or it could get me assassinated. the Ross Byrne Carty situation, it was, no one really knew what way it was going to go before the Joey injury. But with the Joey injury, and I think, I'm not really sure that we know the exact extent of how bad that injury is. They're talking about him maybe being back and fit for the Scottish game. You know, how much quality training is he going to have under his belt at that stage? So the two boys have a great chance of both going. You know, who's to say Joey's going to get back from this injury in time? So all they can do is stay fit, and this is a huge opportunity for Ross. It's not, this is pretty much a full-strength team that he's playing with. you know, so he couldn't be given a better opportunity. And I know there's not many tougher places to go than, you know, Twickenham against a full strength team. But if he puts his hand up today, you'd have to say he's in the driving seat.
How far is Ross Byrne at the moment along his trajectory? How much more do we have to see from him in terms of becoming a top class out half?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's clear to see how much he's come on in the past few seasons. You know, once Joey left and went down to Munster, he got a lot more game time, a lot more opportunities for the games that Johnny wasn't around. When he was in Irish camp, Ross, you know, really controlled the side. He was one of our tallies men, played great. And for the games that Johnny didn't play last year, like that Toulouse match, for instance, the bigger matches, the Munster semi, he was a class act. You know, there wasn't that much of a gulf in standard when he came in there. And he's a really confident guy, and his player management is fantastic. So I think those strengths are really shone through.
Yeah, because the idea from the outside looking in anyway is that he's more modelled on Johnny Sexton than any other out half around, whereas Jack Carty's a bit more of a different character. And I think that's represented in terms of their style of play as well. Is that a fair kind of summation of where they're both at?
Yeah, I think probably that style of play under Pat Lamb that Jack Carty would initially first came into was they really threw the ball around. And, you know, Jack Carty, you know, I've never played with the guy, but he likes to express himself. He's got a lovely kicking game, nice running game. They're just different players. Ross and him are different players, where you could probably say that Ross and Johnny are similar. But, you know, they both also have different strengths and weaknesses. So, I mean, if you've got Johnny going to, you know, Johnny more than likely going to be fit, he will be going to Japan. I think Ross is a great compliment to have, bring him over as well, because they're so similar and Ross is improving, you know, week on week.
Sophie, from what Johnny was saying there a moment ago about that now infamous day against England at the start of this year, Six Nations, there was obviously that dent in confidence that Johnny speaks about. To what extent do you feel that game actually kind of put the book on the table and other coaches looked at what Eddie Jones did and was like, ah, that's how you beat Ireland?
Yeah, I think it's something, it gives other coaches and other teams kind of that, you know, fully loaded guns that they can actually come out and beat Ireland, you know. I think we all know what Eddie Jones is like, and he's very confident in what he's doing, and he can put doubt in people's minds. And I think that day, obviously, the team with the result, it happened. And I think it got everyone talking about what are Ireland going to be like going into the World Cup now. And I think, again, like Johnny said, it may not be about a result today, but it's definitely about performance. I think if Ireland don't win, as long as they put in that performance, I think they're going to show the world what they're capable of doing, especially as a strong side that Joe's putting out. But I think they can't leave doubt in people's minds for this game.
Did the Italy game give you any hope at all in terms of Joe perhaps reacting to what happened in the Six Nations? Granted, it is very, very early pre-season, but tactically, obviously, there was the noticeable shift in terms of the kicking game. But in terms of their reaction, in terms of how Joe Schmidt is going to approach things, do you think that he's learnt a lot from what happened this year?
I think there's been talks about the worry of the way that game was played and things, but as well, tactically, things have got to be tried within a game. It mightn't be something that's going to happen continuously within a game, but it might be something for the back pocket. I think that was blowing the cobwebs out. You know, you've mixed the teams up, but you're giving people a run, and I wouldn't look at that first game as this is how Ireland are going to move forward. I think it was about game time for players, and let's be open, let's see what we can do, let's try a few things. I think today is going to be the real show and the real test of what we're about.
Johnny, what did you think of the, I guess, the change in how Ireland kick? You know, no box kicking, no kicking off nine at all.
Yeah, well, look, you know, the whole thing about coaching is different coaches have different styles. You know, Pat Lamb has, you know, he plays a 2-4-2 different, you know, there's a 1-3-3-1. There's loads of different styles, and that's your coaching, you know, your coaching process and your own coaching theory that you believe in. So you're gonna stick that way. You have to adapt, and you have to make sure that you can change. You have a plan A, plan B, and plan C that you can kick into. And there probably was an over-reliance on the kicking game off nine, but it was something that they were probably world leaders in you know, both kick receipt and kick receipt from attacking perspective, getting up and chasing the box kicks. And so, you know, there does need, and it's probably more about trying to manipulate the backfield to try and create space to find space is probably what they're looking at now, and that's just an added variance to their game, which is good and probably needed. But you know, I think the way, and going back to Ross and what Fergus said about Ross Byrne, I think, you know, the style that Joe likes to play is where the 10 plays on the gain line and you know, brings people, you know, brings defenders to him and plays that way, where, you know, Connacht are, you know, were 2-4-2 when they did play it under Pat, you know, the 10 can be a bit deeper and play off the line, and that's probably what Jack is really good at, that he plays off the line quite well. So I think there is probably a shift in what they're going to do, but you know, the detail is probably not going to change a whole the process is not going to change a whole lot. The detail might, but the process probably won't change a whole lot.
Fergus, what's it like to be a winger chasing down those box kicks?
I suppose you're just expected to get an outcome out of them. So when you go into the games, you know, people have said over the past few seasons, oh, Ireland kicked too much ball away and they kicked this and that. But it's called pressure rugby. Test match rugby is about pressure rugby. Like Saracens last year won the Champions Cup because they were probably the best team of playing pressure rugby. They played in the right parts of the field, but when they kicked box kicking from the likes of Wigglesworth and they're chasing, they at least got a scrap out of it every time, and that's huge for the momentum of a team. So I think today you will see more kicking from both sides, you know, with Ford at 10 and Farrell at 12. I'd say they'll utilize that, and then obviously with Murray and Ross Byrne, because they're warm-up matches, but there's no point in playing out from your 22 against the type of line speed that England bring. You've got to get the ball back down there in the right parts of the field. So, but back to your original question, I mean, going up against Joe Cockanasinghe, he's a pretty tall guy, but personally, I think he can actually be quite vulnerable in the air. So, I think if Murray's box kicking is spot on, we could get a bit of pay out of that. And I think the aerial battle would be big weight in who comes out on top today, to be honest with you.
When you say you're expected to go up and get it, is that expectation from Connor? Is it expectation from Joe? Like when it's your responsibility to go up into the air and actually get possession back? And how much of an expectation is there in terms of how many balls you actually get back into Irish arms?
Geez, you'd want to be at least making a scrap out of I think 4 out of 5. If the kick is spot on, your kick is only as good as your chase. That's I mean, the most spot-on saying about kicking. You can sometimes kicks happen in different matches, whether it's club or country, and you go, what is he doing kicking the ball there? But if the chase isn't good, you know, that can be half the reason why it didn't look like a good kick. So generally, the likes of, when you've got kickers, the standard of Conor Murray, Luke McGrath coming off the bench, Ross Byrne, like they will put kicks on the money for you. So, you know, the pressure will be on our back three to make something out of those.
I'm very keen to get all of your opinions on the idea of, if Ireland had everybody fit, would he perhaps be starting Joey Carberry at 12 or 15? And it's nothing to do with Joey Carberry as such, it's to do with, you bring up Ford and Farrell and perhaps having more playmakers in and around the back line for Ireland. So if we might start with you in terms of, like, what would your philosophy as a new coach, I guess, be on that? Is that the way rugby is moving now and Ireland perhaps need to embrace that?
I suppose you look at Eddie's points this week, saying that he wants to bring more of a passing game into it this week. So I suppose you look at Ireland's backs. We've got Johnny as a solid playmaker, but if you add an extra 10 in there, what else can we do? What are we able to exploit within the defence and against our opponents? It gives an added option, but then also, can you make your 12, your 13, can they also be playmakers instead of just having to have a solid 10 in that position and taking someone else? I think it's about creating playmakers all across the back line.
So everybody basically needs to be able to step up and do that.
I think so.
What do you think, Johnny?
I personally don't think the 10-12 thing of playing kind of in New Zealand, second 5-8 for Ireland, I don't think that that suits Joe's style. I just don't think that's what he's after. It suits Eddie's probably because based on a kicking aspect, you know, he has kickers at 10, 12. Farrell's not shy in defence either, so doesn't take anything out there. But, you know, the way they're set up, it means that they have more decision makers around the place. And also with Elliot Daly, you know, it's probably like for Mike Brown with a left foot coming in at 15 instead of Mike Brown. For Ireland, I think it's, you know, it's about having a linchpin in their 10, and he controls the game and where they go. And then it's all about ball carrying options across the back line. We're probably one or two Mavericks that kind of pop up wherever they want, you know, be that Keith Earls or Jordan Lammer or, you know, those guys that, you know, that are very busy in and around the ruck all the time. I don't think personally that Joe Stiles suits that 10, 12, 12 being a second 5-8, you know. But I also think that, you know, people underestimate, you know, Robbie Henshaw's ball playing ability when he plays 12, or Bundy Aki's ball playing ability when he plays 12. I think they're well capable and they can do it. They can pop up in behind a pot of three and run if Johnny is on the ground. I think that option is there, and they certainly have the skill set to do it.
Yeah, because like when Joe Schmidt was talking about Carberry's injury this week, he mentioned the possibility he gives them at 15 and the possibility he gives them at 9. He didn't mention 12. And we had Andy Dunn on yesterday morning, and he was saying that Joe wouldn't even be dreaming of thinking about playing Joey Carberry at 12. But you do wonder if it's something that perhaps the idea should be floated there. I don't know what you think.
It's too late in the day for that. Like, Joey's sustained a supposed 6-week injury, so he's not going to get any time to even play there with either Ross, Jack or Johnny. And two, he's a race to be fit for the World Cup. I'd say they're not worrying about him, you know, playing at 12. They're worrying about him getting on the plane in the first place. Like, I agree with Johnny. I think that Bundy Aki and Robbie Henshaw and Gary Ringrose are all well capable of distributing the ball. It just depends on the game plan that Joe is looking to play. I mean, generally, the 10s run the show from the plays that are in place. But I think when you look at the likes of Bundy, Robbie and Gary, they're well able to distribute the ball when they're playing for their provinces. So I suppose you just got to wonder.
What about at 15 then? If everybody's fit, who would be your backup to Rob Kearney, assuming Rob Kearney would be your first choice 15?
Jordan Larmour.
Mm. Yeah.
I think like the performances he put in for Leinster last year were outstanding again after having a brilliant first season. So a very exciting option there to have, really, and a great one. I mean, I think I wouldn't be surprised if I presume Jordan might actually get an opportunity there in one of these next couple of Wales games, and he could put his hand up there for selection. Again, these three next matches are going to be hugely physical. I presume there's going to be a couple of injuries, so you just don't know what way things are going to work out by the time they get over there.
Was the criticism of Robbie Henshaw 15 over the top? Is that something that, maybe not even for this World Cup, but shouldn't be abandoned completely for in future for Irish rugby?
No, it shouldn't be at all. Robbie could play, honestly, Robbie could play 12 right out to 15. He's such a good footballer. I fell for him that day because, you know, even as an experienced winger, 15 at test level is, you're against Owen Farrell that day. Yeah. Like, he's the best, one of the best in the world, along with Johnny Sexton. I think both of them are a good bit better than Beauden Barrett as exposing space in the backfield. And you got Robbie to come in for his first game since playing fullback for Connacht, I don't know how many years ago. It was a huge ask. Mm. I mean, and he's been one of the most solid performers for Ireland over the past five seasons. So the amount of scrutiny he was put under after that was very harsh. But I think to think that he wouldn't be able to go in and do a job in maybe one of those lesser games in the group stages, you know, the likes of a Samoa, put him there if there was a couple of injuries and see how he went, you know, it could be a good thing to check out.
And I don't think it was, I think it was a bit of a perfect storm in the sense that, you know, England didn't use their pressure kicking game They didn't just decide teams were named on Thursday. They didn't have the time to completely pivot shift on how they were going to play so that they could isolate Robbie in the backfield. I think it was a tactic that they had planned to use for potentially 10 days to 2 weeks. And unfortunately, Robbie was the one in the backfield that and they it wasn't expected probably from Joe that they were going to go so hard. So high up in their pressure kicking and attacking games, like they were putting in outside the 22, the attacking 22, when they were attacking into Ireland's Ireland zone, they were putting in pressure kicks along the ground, which was exploiting the backfield. That wasn't something that probably they were expecting, and it isolated Robbie in the backfield. But also, they had two very experienced wingers that day, who probably didn't help them out as much as they should have covering that ground. 15 can be a very, very lonely place if you're getting no help from your wingers. And it was just a perfect storm in that regard. But 100% agree with Fergus. Robbie's an incredible footballer, and he's got football in him, and he can play anywhere out. You know, he would have no problem 12, 13, 15 in my eyes.
Yeah, we're close to a full choice team, I think it's fair to say, this afternoon. We've spoken about Ross Burnley, perhaps wouldn't be that first choice. Obviously, Johnny would be there. But I want to get your take on the pack, actually, Sophie, because John Klein has obviously come into the Ireland setup. He's starting again today. I think it's pretty clear that Joe Schmidt had planned this all along. We knew with the residency rule that this was time for the World Cup. We knew that he saw him as somebody who'd come into the panel. And I think we'd be surprised if he didn't make it to Japan, barring any injury at this point. So what exactly was it about him that Joe Schmidt was looking at over the past 2 years and thinking to himself, yeah, I want him in my squad?
I think within the pack, you've got to look at now kind of what combinations he's going to have within his line out, his lift, the jump, who's going to be the best combinations to work together in terms of physicality, who offers more around the park. We've got ball carriers, you know, people who can hit every other ruck. And what best combinations, if Toner's not playing, who's going to step in there with Henderson and... who's going to, I suppose, easy enough kind of slide in there. And I think it's about best partnerships, especially in the second row. When it comes down to scrum time, you've got to be willing to be that engine and go all the way through. Do you know, I do think he's got good combinations, even with Tig on the bench and things. And I still think it's a competition that is there. Do you know, if they get two halves, it could be a different... It's still a 50-50, really, I think, who's going to go, I think.
Right, okay, because I was under the impression that he's jumped ahead of Tig Byrne now in the pecking order, but it's very much up for grabs.
I still feel that there's an opportunity there. Mm-hmm. Again, depending who comes out of the blocks today, I still think there's time enough to see what's going to happen.
I think Tig Byrne is nearly a certainty. So he covers three, four positions. He has to go. With the makeup of the squad, I think, you know, he can play eight. He can he can do a job at six. He certainly gets over the ball like a seven. But I think, you know, someone like Tig with a squad and the makeup of it is, I think Henderson himself, purely based on their, Henderson's definitely going to go. But I think, you know, based on their versatility to be slot back into the back row, I think that could probably go against someone like Jean Clyde.
Yeah, like the versatility, like that's a huge. Kind of both on top of Tig Byrne, and then you've got John Klein as well. Like, when you look at the two of them, are we actually comparing like with like in this regard? If you're putting them both into the second row, it seems that we're not. It seems that perhaps is John Klein a safer option on set piece, or what is Joe Schmidt thinking?
Well, I think Tig Byrne would be ahead of John Klein if it's a simple like for like, just in terms of what he brings around the park. His set piece game might not be up to John Klein's, but I think what he brings around the park, I don't think there's really a comparison there.
How much does Joe Schmidt care about the results in these warm-up games, Fergus?
Of course he cares about the results. He might, you know, tell the media that, you know, he's trying combinations and things might be rusty and, you know, you don't want to peak too soon, but he's such a competitor. I think, you know, it's pretty clear that himself and Eddie Jones have, you know, had their battles over the past couple of years and you know, last Six Nations in Dublin, that was probably a tough pill to swallow for Joe. Eddie Jones coming over with that game plan and probably beating us up physically. So, to go to Twickenham, where England are always ultra physical in front of that crowd, it's going to be no different. So both teams are going to want to win. At the end of the day, they've got both teams have three games left before the start of the World Cup, and you know, winning's a habit. Joe's always said that, and if we can win away in Twickenham today, it would be fantastic bit of momentum for the rest of the squad going into these couple of Wales games. So definitely wants to win the match for sure.
When you were coming back from injury last season, were you targeting these warm-up games as a potential option at the start of next season? Were you looking at perhaps kind of raising the eyebrows of Joe Schmidt to perhaps get a call-up?
I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't have wanted to be in that, you know, extended World Cup pre-season squad, but just so it happens, I picked up the ban, which wasn't great timing. And I also had a lengthy, you know, time on the sidelines last year with injury. So I can't complain with the guys he's picked. He's picked guys on form, fair enough. You know, it would have been great to be in there. But unfortunately, I'm still banned at the moment, so I'd be pretty useless. But I mean, the strength and depth in so many positions, you know, in at the provincial level is huge at the moment, never mind with Ireland. But there's some guys in the back three that are absolutely outstanding and have been outstanding for the past two or three seasons with their provinces that are going to miss out. And, you know, I remember I went to the World Cup in 2011, but in 2015, you know, I got a call late in the day on the Sunday when things were being announced, and I thought I was in the clear, I thought I was going. And Joe Schmidt's phone number popped up on my phone. I'll never forget, my heart sank into my feet. And, you know, I just don't envy what's, you know, in front of a couple of guys who are just in that uncertain area and on the periphery now. They don't know if they're going or not. Because
how does that conversation go with Joe at that point?
There's not a whole lot being given back to it. I mean, listen, it's not an easy call for Joe to make either. It's not an easy one to pick up, but it's certainly not an easy one for him to make. And I appreciate that. And he has to call, you know, 15 guys as well and break their hearts. You know, some guys are working their whole careers since they're boys to try and make a World Cup, and that's the brutal side of this for some of the boys, is that today they might only get 60 minutes to showcase what they've been doing well for the last 4 years for their clubs, and if they don't go well, it might flip the coin either way, so it's a tough one.
Was there any part of you that was kind of preparing for that conversation with Joe? Obviously you have to stay positive and all that and think that you are on that plane, but as you say, when the name pops up on the phone, you kind of know what's in store.
Yeah, definitely felt like declining the call that time and just turning up then in the Carton House. But yeah, you don't quite prepare yourself for it. I think, like, when you're in that bubble, when the boys are in the bubble, they've been over in Portugal together, they've been in Carton House for a certain period of time. Every single one of those players, no matter how they've been going for their clubs, once you're in that extended squad, you've got to believe you're going. And they all will, you know, because you're in there and you're like, you know, with an injury or a bit of form, I could easily be going here. And that's just the way you've got to think. And, you know, that season for me in 2015 was probably a bit of a, you know, had a few injuries that year, probably hadn't hit top form, and, you know, I hadn't had amazing pre-season, but I still thought there was a chance I was going to go. So, you know, I've no doubt that all the boys in there will be thinking the same thing. But to be honest, no, there's no way you prepare yourself for that call. It's just a bit of a gut-wrenching one.
Did you have a conversation with Joe Schmidt this time around?
He sent me a couple of texts during the year, but nothing on the phone. I mean, there's nothing, like, at the end of the day, I was banned. So, you know, if I couldn't showcase myself in these pre-season warm-ups for Ireland, then it would have been unfair to even bring me in to consider me. But, listen, all I can do is try to get back playing for Leinster at the start of the season. And, I mean, who knows what could happen any given Sunday, right?
And are the texts just being sent in, just checking up on you in terms of how the body's going and all that?
Not really, no. I've just been doing my own thing in Leinster, right. And we've been training hard back there. We've got the lads have a warm-up game against Canada today in Toronto, and then we've got our last warm-up game against Northampton in a couple of weeks, which I'll be able to play in. And then our season starts on the 27th, so, you know, that'll be rolling on in the very much in the background when the World Cup is on. But, you know, all I can do is just keep working hard, stay fit there, and see what happens.
Sophie, when we talk about World Cup warm-up games, are they a perfect indicator that a World Cup might not go so well, or that you're in flying form and that it will go well? Because I think there's an obvious comparison in your case between 2017 and 2014. Obviously two very different levels of the spectrum in terms of success at a World Cup. Was it evident in the warm-ups?
Trying to think back to 2014, I think, you know, warm-up games, like I said, you're dusting the cobwebs off, you're trying to tee things out, you're trying to put combinations together, and it is that time to try things. the difference for us between 2014 and 2017 for me was culture. So I think it's too difficult to actually compare one another. But I think warm-up games, they are something that we need because we need to get ourselves physically and mentally prepared to go into the tournament. But it's not, I don't think, the result isn't the win or losing of the World Cup. It's what the performance comes down to. If we're able to put things in place and we have success on that, that's what it's all about.
But if the culture wasn't right, you'd imagine that the warm-up games and all the preseason would falter and go by the wayside a little bit.
Yeah, so as in, if we look back to 2014, for us, you know, we mightn't have had the best warm-up games, but you could see the progression as time went on. We trained again, we had another game, and you could see things with a positive outcome. And then obviously you saw the success within the World Cup, but that was all down to culture, I suppose squad as a whole, management, players, and I think before we went into the World Cup in 2017, we were already broken as a squad. So in terms of combinations, plays, just things didn't work out at all.
What was the main reason why it was broken?
I don't think we had the right culture. I don't think in terms of players, management, we were on the same pathway. And I think it was two separate journeys. And I think you have to believe in... You have to believe in what you're actually doing, what the end result is, that you're all buying into the same result. And I don't think that was happening. It was, I suppose, evident from a long way out from the World Cup as players and as a group. But
because I was going to ask, like, when do you realise that? So it's actually well in advance of the World Cup. You kind of know going up to the World Cup, this has not been a good preparation.
Yeah, and I think as players, though, you kind of get a bit stunted going, how do we fix things? What is it that you have to do? And you're in this place where, again, you're still fighting for a jersey and you want to be in that squad and you don't want to tread on too many toes, I think, really. Do you know? You want to do the hard work and you want to be in that jersey and you want to go to the tournament and you want to represent your country. And I think that's the hardest part.
Right.
It's probably a double-edged sword in the sense that if the culture isn't right, you know that the culture isn't right deep down. But then, purely selfishly, you're like, well, I don't want to ruffle the feathers here because I want to go.
Yeah.
So you're kind of
how do you
balance that? And you know, if you're going to criticise the culture, you're essentially criticising the person that's responsible for putting you on the plane.
Yeah.
So it can be very. It seems very. It's a very very hard one because you know professional sport or sport at elite level is probably the most selfish thing in the world because you have to do stuff purely for yourself when it comes down to it. So it can be very very difficult.
I think it's kind of an all or nothing thing. If everyone doesn't do the same thing, you can't be that one person to ruffle the feathers.
Yeah, you've isolated yourself and you basically just say, right, well, I'll leave now because I'm not going to be picked.
You don't want to do a Roy Keane on it, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hey, it seems that any year ending in a seven is just a disaster for Ireland rugby teams at a World Cup. Like, as I was going to mention it to you as well, Fergus, in terms of that culture, in terms of actually being hyper-aware, perhaps, of what can go wrong in a World Cup. Was that the case in 2011? Where everybody's like, well, we all know what happened 4 years ago, or was 2007 just the thing you guys just did not talk about?
Probably not. No, it wasn't really talked about at all, to be honest. But there was a crew that were obviously on that. So that you had the likes of O'Connell, Gordon Darcy, Bronagh Driscoll, Isaac Boss. You know, you'd a few guys there that were on that World Cup as well, but definitely no hangover from it at all. If anything, there was a freshness about that group because you had a group of different guys who had never been to a World Cup before. You know, the likes of Keith Earls and Johnny Sexton and Dunica Ryan and people like that, Cian Healy. So I think that World Cup was potentially one that certainly got away for us to get to our first semi. I think, you know, I think Wales came out with the game plan in that quarter final of just chopping our big ball carriers, and it worked. They produced massive line speed and obviously with that sneaky snipe down the blind side from Mike Phillips just hurt us in the end, but that was definitely one that got away. And I mean, between the near misses of, you know, the Argentinian game as well, just a day where he just didn't turn up really. So it just shows that it doesn't really matter how well any of these teams going to the World Cup go in those group stages. You know, once you get to that knockout rugby, this is probably the most open World Cup I've ever remembered. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think there's definitely five teams that could win it.
Yeah, it seems that with regards to knockout rugby, that there has to be some sort of consideration for actually peaking at that right time, or at the very least just thinking about what your squad would be if you get ravaged by injuries, as happened to Ireland in 2015. So people say, oh, we're just thinking about the first couple of games here, but really, Joe Schmidt and his management team have to be thinking a little bit down the line at least, do they?
Definitely. I mean, you've got to manage players. Realistically, you look at the first couple of games and you go Scotland, you're going full bore there. So you got they're going to be a tough team to beat. To be honest, you wouldn't be going far off with Japan either. You'd probably maybe rest a couple of guys who could be carrying a couple of niggles. Japan are going to be very hard to beat over there. Well, in terms of, they'll be very tough for 60 minutes. Yeah. They have the whole country behind them. They won't be easy. So I'd say Joe will go strong in that as well. And then obviously with the likes of Samoa, he'll mix things up. And for those last two games, so it's about player management. You know, you've got a couple of guys there a bit older and they can't play every match. But I mean, Joe's an expert at that, and he's no fool. He's very good at taking care of players and definitely taking care of his most important ones. So that's just something they'll have to keep a close eye on once they get over there.
Yeah, it's hard to know, Johnny, whether or not the schedule works out really well for Ireland or not great for Ireland. Would you rather have like the big games at the end of a pool stage that you're going full bore into a quarter final, or else have those couple of weeks essentially to rest your key players?
Yeah, I think the couple of weeks is probably a good thing in the sense that, you know, you're not trying to do, you know, what would be, you know, four games on the bounce to try and get to a semi-final, and then you're looking at five games on the bounce to try and win it. You know, where if you can go, you know, two, rest, you know, keep guys just ticking over with 10, 15 minutes here, there and there, and then you have hopefully a fresh squad for the quarterfinal, whichever way it's going to go, then you're looking at going 3 weeks on the bounce to potentially win a World Cup, where if you're trying to win a World Cup, having to go five on the trot with the attrition rate in rugby, you're going to be lucky. You'll be lucky to try and be able to put out, you know, certainly 3 weeks in a row, putting the same side out 3 weeks in a row, which is your first choice team. So I think that little break in between where you can freshen things up and keep things going, you know, you'd look at, you know, maybe Johnny, you know, possibly being on the bench for, say, the Japan game with the knowledge that, you know, 60 minutes are going to be crazy. So you'd hope that, you know, he'd come on and be able to close the game out, where he's then played, you're looking at maybe, you know, 100 minutes over two games, and then you can see where you're going from there, you know.
Well, like, we can talk to her blue in the face, though, about this stuff. And at the end of the day, like, you look back to 2011 and the All Blacks are dead set favourites, and which is fair enough. And then they... three or four tens get injured and Steve O'Donnell comes over and kicks the winning goal. Like, who would have predicted that? You just can't. These tournaments, they're so attritional. There's so much on the line. Such a short period in between matches to recover that there's an element of luck involved as well about, which guys get injured, which guys don't. And it's a tough one to know, really.
Yeah.
Like, because that obviously has been the big talking point for the last 4 years. It seems it's come up in every single rugby conversation for 4 years in a row now, since that Argentina game, about how Ireland actually managed to develop that depth. So if you forget about all the failings of the Six Nations in terms of Ireland stylistically, I think you have to say Joe Schmidt has achieved that in terms of building that depth in almost every position.
You'd have to say so. Yeah, he has. I mean, it'll be as strong a squad going to a World Cup as we've probably ever had. Mm. You'd have to say that. Yeah. I think in previous World Cups, you could have looked at maybe 20 players or 15 players if they're all fit, going, geez, we could beat most teams. But now, with the 31 that are being picked, which is such a small pool of players from how many quality guys there are in Ireland, like, if we can manage to keep everyone fit from the people that he's picking, he could pick, what, at least two guys in most positions that'll do as good a job as each other, maybe bar two or three.
Yeah.
So,
definitely, I think it's probably the biggest one. Like, you look back to 2011, like, I would have been in the 52 original, whatever, when we first met up in Carton House. If it was today, I wouldn't be in the top 65 or 70. Like, you know, that's the reality of how far the game has come and the quality of players over the last, 8 years. And, you know, genuinely, you... you can argue for so many players to get on the plane. Mm. And I think what Fergus said is hugely important, that the likelihood is that there could be anything to 36, 37, 38 players used at this World Cup by the time, if hopefully all going well, they get to that semi-final.
In that 31, though, who are you looking at the moment in terms of somebody who might be on the bubble? Are you making a case for anybody who may be in, who may be out, who should be on that plane, Johnny?
Well, I think Todd Byrne, as I spoke about already, yeah. I think he definitely needs to be on the plane just because of his versatility, because he can play 8-6 second row. I think that is, you know, I think that's vital. You know, same again with you know, Earlsey, but we all knew, but like his versatility, being able to play 15, 13 wing, and we spoke about it beforehand. I think someone like Jordan Larmour, he probably has the edge on a few people just because of that versatility when it comes down to push, you know, when it comes to those critical calls that it's going to be literally 1v1. They're going to look at that added versatility, and they probably lean towards someone being able to play two positions rather than three positions when it comes to it.
In terms of today's game, Johnny, I wanted to get your take on this England squad. Looking at it on paper, it's ridiculous. Like, it's very, very strong.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's as strong as they can be without probably Marco Vanapolo. And, you know, I think England are a danger when they have so many fit bodies and able bodies. But I think they're probably a danger now that, you know, there was question marks over the buy-in into Eddie Jones's beliefs and what he was doing and how he was trying to do it. But everyone seems to be singing off the same hymn sheet now going forward, and I think that's a danger in the sense that, you know, if they keep everyone together and they don't pick up too many knocks, they're certainly in with a shot. You know, they have a quality team.
I don't think it's their strongest side. I think it's an extremely strong side, but I don't think it's their strongest one.
Who gets in there?
Like I think Vunipola obviously would start. In the front row, but what I think at the World Cup, Jones's best team would be Cruz, Laws, Itoje, Curry, Vunipola at 8, and then you've got Farrell at 10. You play Tuilagi at 12 and Slade at 13, and putting Jack Nowell and Johnny May on the wings.
Support on the bench.
I think that Farrell is
that team as well, but I don't think he'll pick that. I think that is the best team that he can pick, but for some reason I think he wants to get George Ford on the pitch. He's been giving him so many chances and so many opportunities, like being from captain. I think in Eddie Jones's mind, I think he plays, but I don't see that. I think you're 100% right that his best backline certainly is Farrell, Tuilagi, Slade. I think Slade is class, and the fact that there'd be even a question mark of whether he would play or not, I'd be questioning that. Eddie Jones's thought process on that. I just don't think he's going to go that way.
Injured,
no, I just don't think he'll. Yeah. I think you're 100% right, but I just see Jones just had something about forward. I don't know why.
I just don't think this is Jones's. I don't think Jones has looked at this game and go, I'm going to play my strongest team.
I think he's probably
going to do that in the next two matches as opposed to this one. Good. I think that the likes of Underhill have been great, but I don't think he'll start for England at the World Cup. No. That's just what I think. I think there's one or two others. I just think Farrell's so good at 10. Like, you saw what he did for Saracens last year, you saw what he did in Dublin last year. Like, he's one of the best 10s in the world, so why not play him at 10 as opposed to 12? Yeah. That's just what I think.
Because it is very interesting when we speak about having two playmakers in your team. Like, is that what Jones is going towards? Is it towards this trend as well? Because he's perhaps looking at that saying, this was not part of how we were so good in 2019, that all the other things came together, but we had actually abandoned Ford and Farrell at 10 and 12. And actually, maybe that wasn't the problem. I just need to double-check that was the issue and see how we perform today. Like, I don't know. I can see why you would play with those two playmakers in the backfield, but ultimately I can also see why you want Henry Slade starting at 13.
Mm. Yeah, I think Slade's a nice distributor, you see.
Yeah.
He's a good distributor. And I know he's a 13, but, you know, Tuilagi's the battering ram that he's the template of what England are probably going to be looking to do to most teams at the World Cup, and that's bully people. And that's what they did in Dublin last year. So.
I just, that forward, I just don't, like, I would have picked Cipriani ahead of him. Now, I know there's cultural issues and all that kind of stuff associated with Cipriani, but I think Cipriani's been, you know, he's been the one that on form in the Premiership and Europe, he's played so well and he has that maverick style. I just, that's for why I just don't understand, like, he gives forward so many opportunities after opportunities where someone like Danny Cipriani is just such a talent and he's been playing so well that I just think Ford comes into his thought process a lot, but I don't understand it myself. But I just, that's just what I
actually
think,
don't understand how Alex Good hasn't, I know he's not in the squad, but like for how good,
like there's three or four lads you go, what are they doing in the squad?
No, but the thing is, if he was in there, you could easily just go to Lange and Slade because you got him as the extra distributor as he did for Saracens. But I mean, that's a conversation for another day. But
Sophie, can England win the World Cup?
I think, like we've said, there's a number of teams that can at the minute and put the hand up to. I don't think it's set on who. I couldn't predict it at the moment. I think, like what we've talked about, get through the group games, you've got injuries. I think this tournament's going to be extremely physical. You look at the weather in Japan now, how are players actually going to cope with that? I know obviously teams are going warm weather training, but it's going to be different with the humidity and everything. And I think it's going to be a long tournament for the bodies, and I suppose depending on how the group stages are fixed in terms of games and are players rested. I don't know.
In terms of outsiders then, just before we wrap up, Fergus, who are you thinking? Like, do France have a possible opportunity at this World Cup?
Yeah, but obviously I mentioned, I think four or five teams could win it, one of them being Ireland, but I do think that France are, that they're a World Cup side. They always, they pull performances out of the bag. I could see them scraping through that group stage into a quarter and maybe just shocking something in a quarter final. And who's to say they couldn't get to a final? You know, they, when they did it in 2011, no one expected it then. They're, you know, they've got the backbone of a good culture there from some very strong guys from Toulouse who went so well last year with the likes of DuPont, Intermac and the rest. So, I'd say they could be a big outsider for me, but that's a big long shot.
We might just get one more answer from the three of you in terms of who you're currently thinking will win the World Cup. Johnny, we'll start with you.
South Africa.
Sophie?
I'm similar thoughts, yes.
South Africa as well.
Yeah.
Fergus? France.
Oh, God, it's such a tough one. I think with the rub of the green, and if Ireland can manage to steer clear of injuries, I think if we can get back up to where we were in 2018, there's no reason why we can't win it.
Right, that's a nice positive note to end it on. Fergus, Sophie and Johnny, thanks a million for joining us for this very special Saturday panel this afternoon. We're partnering with Energia for their first ever Positive Energy Tag Tournament right here at Energia Park.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.